Has having expired, the Senate is now back in session. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Objection. The Senate will go to business of House bills on third reading. As she recognizes, Senator from Phillips on House Bill 1173.
We are on the order of business of House bills for third reading. House Bill 1173, Senator from Phillips. Senator from the 27th, for what purpose do you rise?
Unanimous consent to introduce special guest.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Mr. President, on my right and your left, we have Kevin Teagarden from Jackson, Missouri, and he's here today representing the Missouri Pharmacy Association. Give him a warm welcome.
May the body welcome the guest of the Senator from the 27th. Senator from the 7th, for what purpose do you rise?
Unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, joining us today is Bill Lenz from Kansas City. Bill attends the church that I go to, John Knox Presbyterian Kirk, and I've been asking him to come see how the wheels of government spin, and he finally took me up on it and joined us today. And also visiting us is Lynn Reese. Lynn is also from Kansas City, and she is the volunteer director for the Humane Society of the U.S., and I would ask the body to make both of them feel very welcome while they're here at the Capitol.
May the body welcome the guest of the Senator from the 7th. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that House Bill 1173 be called from the informal calendar.
Senator from the Phelps County has moved that House Bill 1173 be brought from the informal calendar. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senator from the 4th had the floor as we were going into recess. Senator from the 4th, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire the Senator from Phelps again?
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, where did we leave off?
You were at 150 on caps, or was it 250?
I was at 150 and you were at 25?
Yes.
All right.
Dollars. you had just finished your discussion with the Senator from Buchanan, and he gave you some kind of personal aspects of Med-Mal caps and some of the effect that it has had on his profession. And you and I were back to, I think you were getting ready to offer your amendment, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Something up. Okay. All right. Right. I'm sorry. I'm just getting my head back together on this. I tell you what, I'm going to offer an amendment to my amendment right now. Thank you for the inquiry, and then I'll come back and see what you have to think about this. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 4th.
Mr. President, I have an amendment to my amendment.
Has the amendment been distributed? Send your amendment forward.
It is being distributed. I will not close until it is distributed.
Would you like to explain your amendment while it is being distributed?
Yes, Mr. President, yes. This is an amendment that it's very short. I probably could have had it read. It just says such cause of action that are the defendant health care provider failed to use such care as reasonably prudent and careful health care provider should have under similar circumstances, and that such failure to use such reasonable care directly or cause or directly contributed to cause the damages of the
Do you move for its adoption?
Yes, Mr. President, I do move for its adoption. What it does is it provides a standard of care that's reasonably prudent instead of what is in the bill. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
The Senator from the 4th moves that Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 1173 be adopted. Any senator wish to be desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 7th.
To inquire the Senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Okay, Senator, I'm not an attorney, and it sounds like you've got some pretty strong legalese in here. Can you kind of explain where in the bill that you would like to insert this and what you're trying to accomplish?
If you read the amendment, where is my amendment? Here it is. If you read the amendment to the amendment, it strikes line 9, and it goes to inserting in lieu thereof the following lines 4 to 6.
So is this on page 1, line 9, where in the bold the General Assembly expressly excludes? We're going to start there? Or are we on the back page, line 9?
We are on, this is...
Three senators standing. Senator from Phelps, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I raise point of order. I don't think that this amendment actually fits on this bill. I think it goes beyond the scope of the bill, and but like to have an opinion.
Are you raising the point of order on the underlying amendment or the amendment to the amendment?
The amendment to the amendment.
Amendment to the amendment. It will be so referred to the President pro tem of the Senate. Sergeant Varden, could you retrieve the President pro tem? Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to take that point of order under advisement briefly. Thank you.
The Senate will stand in ease. No, I'm sorry. The point of order is under advisement, and this bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, I object to the Senate to go to our business of Senate bill's perfection and formal calendar. I ask you to recognize the Senator from Nottoway on SJR 25.
Order of business, the Senate bill's for perfection. We are on SJR on the informal calendar. We are on the order of business of bills for perfection for the informal calendar. We are on SJR 25. Okay.
Senate Joint Resolution 25 be brought before the body.
Senator, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I move that Senate Joint Resolution 25 be brought before the body.
The Senator from DeKalb has moved that SJR 25 be brought from the informal calendar for perfection. For all those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from DeKalb.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a Senate substitute that I would like to send forward.
Send the substitute forward. Has it been distributed?
I do not believe it has been. I think they are copying and will distribute immediately. I know I will not close prior to that occurring.
Do you waive its reading?
I would request a waiver of the reading.
Would you like to explain the substitute
yes.
while it's being
Thank
passed
you.
Around?
Thank you, Mr. President. And I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute. Essentially what Senate Joint Resolution 25 is, it is the debate that we were having earlier, the previous bill, of whether or not we're going to have non-economic damages, and if so, what level they would be at. I believe that when the court struck that, they struck it on a constitutional basis. What this would do, Senate Joint Resolution 25 would do, is this will put before the voters the ability to fix that constitutional issue. What it would say is, if approved by the voters, it would say that the legislature clearly has the authority to institute non-economic damage caps. If the voters don't approve it, then we're right stuck where we are today. Basically, Mr. President, what this does, this actually is what I believe is the fix that needs to occur. I believe that what we have to first do is, before we have the fight about what the cap level would be, you first have to have the authority clearly defined that we can have that we have that authority. The courts have made it unclear. This clarifies the Constitution that the legislature does have that authority. If we are going to maintain a vibrant private sector, if we are going to ensure that there are doctors in this state, if we are going to ensure that out-of-control, frivolous lawsuits do not damage the long-term economic health of this state, we have to get Missouri's playing field level with other states. This is the first step in that journey. It does not do it by itself, but it is the first step in that journey. And, Mr. President, basically, as we have talked about, as we heard from the prior bill, due to some outlandish court cases and judges who have, for whatever reason, now interpreted the Constitution dramatically different than we have since 1821, We are now in a spot where, unfortunately, we have our medical community at risk, our businesses, small business owners and entrepreneurs under attack. Just an absolutely unfortunate situation. Senate Joint Resolution 25 would bring resolution to that. With that, Mr. President, I renew my motion, and I would like to inquire of the senator from Buchanan.
The senator from Nottoway moves for the adoption of Senate substitute for SJR 25. Any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator, you asked to inquire of who?
Buchanan.
The senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. All right, Senator. I know you were down here earlier, you and the senator from Phelps, senator from Forth. I think we're in a lot of dialogue, and I was meeting with some folks upstairs, and I just wanted to kind of get an idea here of where we are. I know they've laid over. From your perspective, Senator, I guess I want to get a little bit of your thoughts on, do we need to proceed? I believe we need to move forward and clearly define in the Constitution that the legislature has the authority to institute caps.
I think that this method is the cleanest, best way to go. Let the people of Missouri, say what they want. It would absolutely answer the question. The senator from Phelps has a bill. I think that it would work, but you never know how the Supreme Court of Missouri will interpret things. So there's always that question mark, although I think it works. I hope it works.
Well, the part that I have been unclear about is my understanding is that the medical community is the one that is pushing the fix the senator from the Phelps has. But I don't know how they have come to the conclusion in their mind that they can fix a constitutional problem with a statutory answer.
Well, the answer is that the Supreme Court of Missouri threw out the caps that we passed, you and I passed, back in 2005. And they said that because of the fact that at common law that the caps on non-economic damages were not covered by common law, England, that because we had not created a statutory cause of action, that then they were thrown out. And so his bill basically says that won't apply, that common law rule won't apply in the cases of medical malpractice, and we're now creating a statutory cause of action for medical malpractice. Basically, that's what it is. So, the reason that they think that it would work is that it was the argument used by the Supreme Court. And so they're just saying, okay, well, we're just going to do what you said hadn't been done. That's their thing. See, what you're doing here is you're just saying, we're not even going to give the Supreme Court an opportunity to opine on that. We're just going to change the Constitution.
I think we no longer have a Supreme Court that interprets the law. I think we have a Supreme Court that's now rewriting the law. They're rewriting it when it comes to employment law. They're rewriting it when it comes to medical malpractice. We now have a bench of justices that decided they're going to implement their will upon the people versus interpreting the law that the legislature passed. And I just think that's wrong. And I think that it's now time to go back to the people and say, listen, we need the people to clarify. How do you want this to work? You want the legislature to have the authority to set these caps, or do you want six or seven people across the street who never come back up for accountability, who there's no check and balance on, to unilaterally but to sit at a bench and make the decision? And I think the people have the right to make that decision.
Well, the only thing is that the people can be swayed by money spent on, political campaigns.
There's no doubt. And I think that whether it's the business community, whether it's the medical community, whether it's any of these groups that are under attack because of this poor public policy that's been created by this court decision, I believe at some point they have to stand up and fight. And right now, now is the time. And I think that they need to do that. And I think that at the end of the day, we live in a democracy that is driven by and is accountable to
the people. Senator, we don't live in a
representative
democracy.
Form of government or whatever there you like
you
to call
go.
It.
We do not live in a democracy.
But the reality is that at the end of the day, it is about the people and for the people, and the people are supposed to be those who have the final say.
Right.
And in the current environment to which we are operating, that is not the case.
Right.
So, Senator, I want to find out, I want to get some thoughts from you on, you have been involved in this from our time in the House. When we were in the House, you were involved. You were actually a practicing, day-to-day practicing doctor. Now have been on the other side, on the insurance side, have seen that side of the equation, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
What insight or thoughts? I'm just kind of looking for your general thoughts here, as we work through this.
Well, something has to be done. I mean, the situation is bad. We could revert to a similar situation that we had back in 2000 when doctors were leaving the state. We can't have that. We have to have doctors to take care of our citizens. And, you know, if your wife were in a car accident and needed a neurosurgeon, you want that neurosurgeon to be there to take care of her, to remove that blood clot from her brain, save her life. And, you know, if your wife were expecting and
let's hope we don't end up there again. Well, we should be at that
you
point
never know
before.
You never know about those things.
Okay.
But but if that were the case, and some problem occurred and she needed to emergently see an obstetrician, you'd want that obstetrician to be there. It's important. We've got to have those people. And if the tort environment gets like it was back in 2000, and doctors start leaving the state because of the caps are gone, that's going to put our people at risk. So we've got to have this. We've got to have this this fix.
I agree. All right, Senator. I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate your insight that you've seen this from both sides. And I appreciate you taking a couple minutes for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from Nottoway.
I'd like to inquire the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
All right, Senator. I missed the end of the discussion. I was here just prior to us leaving before lunch. If I remember right, we were debating caps and the cap level, if I remember correctly.
Right. In the original House bill, the cap's at $350,000. It takes it back to what it was before July of last year, I think 31st, when the Supreme Court, on a 4-3 split decision, said that we had never abrogated ourselves from common law statutorily, and that's why that they felt that the caps would not stand. So that's why the door was opened. Maybe this is a fix. Your ideas are way a lot better. I love it. So, we don't have to depend on someone else making a decision. But I think the amendment offered was $1 million caps and a COLA. We're $350 to $1 million. Obviously, we may have an agreement somewhere in there, but it's not at $1 million. And apparently, they're not at $350. So, this would open the way for us to do some great things. So this SJR is sweet.
So in your bill, you'd put $350,000.
Yes.
And the senator from the 4th, right?
Right.
Wanted it at $1 million.
$1 million with a COLA, cost of living.
With a COLA.
Yes.
Okay. And so, then the point of order that was raised on what?
Well, he's offered two different amendments, and one of his amendments, I felt that probably expanded a cause of action or created a new cause of action, and that's what's under advisement right now.
Okay.
So I asked for a point of order that it was you know, that the amendment wasn't appropriate, and so we'll get a decision on that.
Senator, I guess a general question I have is it worth the discussion here if we're going to have to go to the ballot to fix this and right. let the people make that decision? Should we just go ahead and put hard caps in place?
I think it would be wise.
All right. So while you and I are talking, let's start drafting, and let's draft an amendment that would place hard caps in this bill.
At 350.
Let's do this. Let's start at 500, and for every hour that it's filibustered, we're going to take $50,000 off, and we're just going to keep working our way down. Until we get to a point that we reach an agreement. How about that? So it's in everybody's best interest to settle early. The longer we go, the lower it gets.
Good plan.
We have a time clock. If they go long enough, it's zero, and then at some point they start paying us. Okay, so they're working on that amendment. Clearly this has been a challenge. This issue, as you know, has been around for the last couple of years, and we failed to deal with it last year.
Right. I've been on the floor fighting hard for this since 2012, and to try to get meaningful caps put back on, for the simple reason that I do think it affects young doctors as they're finishing their internships and their residencies as to whether or not they stay in Missouri. I think it really affects whether or not a specialist chooses to come to Missouri, and I think it's very important because we reached a crisis back in the 80s leading up to the year 2000. We were losing insurance companies. I think there was 32 at one time that offered malpractice coverage for doctors. We got down to 8 of them, and we're losing them, and we were losing docs to the tune of over 1,000. And so I think it's an important issue.
Well,
folks.
What I think is frustrating about this is that in 2005, everyone got at the table. They made an agreement at $350,000. That was the deal. And the deal was immediately challenged through legal mechanisms by those who make their wealth by redistributing the wealth of others.
Right.
I do not believe that is good for the long-term health. And now we're at a point where instead of everyone keeping the commitments they made in 2005, we're now back here having the same fight again almost 10 years later.
Right.
And to me, if we can't get to resolution on this and we have to go to the ballot, we just as well fix this problem once and for all and
right.
let the people have their say.
Let the people weigh in on it, and I do think that people do understand the ballot language enough that they will weigh in on it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 12th.
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forwarded. Forward. Has it been distributed?
I believe it is being distributed. I would request a waiver of the reading.
Reading will be waived.
I would move for the adoption of the amendment. And what this does, Mr. President, it is now 4:10, and for the next hour, the offer on the table is damage caps at $500,000. At 5:10, that will go down to $450,000. At 6:10, it will go down to $400,000, and I think you get where we're going here. So, with that, Mr. President, I would move for the adoption and be happy to answer any questions.
The Senator from the 12th moves for adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute to SJR 25. Any Senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 10th, for what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the Senator from Nottoway.
Senator from Nottoway, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
You like my amendment, don't you?
Well, you know, I like it. If we get down to zero, then there's no caps, right?
Well, even better yet, we're going to go the opposite way, and you'll start paying me.
Oh, I'm going to start paying you. I love it. Yeah, this is a great idea. This is a brilliant idea.
That's a good point. At some point, you get all the way to zero.
I just don't understand why we're starting at 500,000, since right now the cap is basically infinity. I mean,
here's why 500 is the original number was 350.
Okay.
And the number that was kind of thrown around last year, I think, was like 7 or 750. So I just grabbed a number in the middle and thought, we'll start here. There's no scientific reason for it other than I like 500.
Okay, and now remind me of the math again. Every hour, 50,000
yes.
is off the table.
Got it.
But what you're not saying, though, that once we
you
get
know what I might do for you, because you and I have been here for a long time together. Sure. We'll be the last two leaving later this year. I might be willing to go like to 350 and stop there for you.
Oh, that's so nice.
You're
Thank
welcome,
you.
Senator.
So how long do we have to talk then?
Just a few hours, like 3 or 4 hours.
I appreciate it. You know what? You can. No one can say that you are not a generous man. Thank you.
And no one can say that I'm not creative.
You were very creative, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the 10th.
I inquire of the Senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, you know, one of our colleagues cannot get his coffee cup now that we have started this inquiry. Isn't that a really sad state of affairs?
It is sad. You know, it's not morning anymore. You shouldn't be drinking coffee this late in the day anyway, right?
Wow. Listen to the lawyer giving the advice to the medical professional over here. Unbelievable. Senator, I just wanted to make sure, first of all, that you understood that we're on the clock right now. But second of all, I wanted to ask you where we are as far as the issue that we were dealing with before SJR 25 came up. Have you heard from anyone about whether or not there's going to be a ruling on the point of order on your amendment?
I have not heard of anybody. Nobody has told me there's going to be a ruling.
Okay.
The President pro tem took copies of the amendment to the amendment, and the bill, and he has it under advisement.
All right. I didn't know if there was an update on any of that. Then the second thing is, are you aware of what's on the floor now?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm not aware of a lot of things.
The first bill, or the bill that was brought up by the Senator from Nottoway, was SJR 25. And he actually and I probably agree on something, which is that I do believe that if there is going to be a fix relating to caps, that it is going to have to take place in the Constitution. That's my understanding of the ruling that I read from the Missouri Supreme Court. That's so what he's saying is that we need to go to the ballot to address this issue. So he has an SJR that basically says that the state of Missouri can implement these caps.
All right.
So that's there.
That is SJR 25.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, he has also offered an amendment. And by the way, he has a floor sub that includes ballot language. That's the only difference between his introduced SJR and the floor sub, is that he does introduce ballot language.
And he dropped that sub the other day, right?
Just dropped it just now.
I've got it. Oh, that's an amendment. Okay.
Then.
There it is. I see it. Okay.
Then he's offered an amendment.
Then he offered an amendment to his floor sub?
To the floor sub. And here's the part you need to be aware of. So this amendment basically sets the caps at 500,000.
Right.
And he offered this amendment at 10 minutes after 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And his offer is this, Senator, that for every hour that we're out here on the floor discussing this, he's going to take $50,000 away from his offer.
Is that in the amendment, or is that what he said?
Oh, that's just what he said.
Oh.
It's not in the amendment. I'm not sure that you could word an amendment that actually said that, but...
Oh, I think you could.
I think there was just maybe a Putin reference here.
I might know the guy that said that.
One of the senators wanted to know when we were going to go storm Crimea. So I just... anyway. So then, presumably, if this were to move forward, then the offer at 510 would be for $450,000. At 610 would be for $400,000. I mean, I'm not good at math, but I think that's the way he's working. Now, when we get to zero... It is my understanding that doesn't mean that there are no caps, but that there can never be a reward for non-economic damages.
That would be his offer. Okay.
And then if we go past zero and we start getting in the negative, then presumably the injured person would have to start paying the doctor for their injury. My understanding. I just wanted you to be fully aware of what's on the floor right now and where our debate is headed at this point.
Did he mention anything about daylight savings time?
No, I don't think there was any special accommodation because of daylight savings time. I don't think so. But regardless, I wanted to, and so I, the purpose of my inquiry, in all seriousness, was to see if you had any indication about the issues that you were talking about. I did want to actually ask you about the amendment that you had.
Are you going to roll or not?
I actually wanted to talk to you about the amendment that you had. It was my understanding that it had to do with the similarly situated language, or was that something else?
That's exactly what it is.
Okay. All right.
The amendment to the amendment just reinstates the current case law.
Okay.
Not to the similarly. The current bill has similarly situated, and my amendment to my amendment reinstates the current case law about the standard of care.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood. All right. And then you are now fully up to speed on where we are right now on SJR 25 and what we're discussing.
Yes.
That's on
yes.
the floor. And you yes. also understand the offer that has been made. And I'm not sure what authority had to make that offer. I'm not sure. It was just kind of a good idea that he came up with. So
are we putting $500,000 in the Constitution?
Yeah, uh-huh.
We are.
You know, Senator, I learned long ago that our Constitution is more of a statute book than anything else, and so I don't think that that really – I mean, I wish it wasn't the case, and I think a lot of people out here agree with me that we should not treat our Constitution like a statute book, but that's how we've treated it for the last few decades, so I'm happy to maybe throw in some additional language to tighten up how easy it is to amend our Constitution, but I don't know that that would get a lot of traction. Maybe a couple people might take – I don't know. We'll see. But that's where we are. And, yeah, so we're putting the actual cap into the Constitution with this.
All right.
I just want to make sure you're aware of that. I also have to take a quick phone call, and so I just wanted to bring you up to speed and let you know that I have to step off the floor for just a few minutes, and I'll be right back.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 4th, well, what purpose do you raise?
To speak with the Senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
You know, constitutions go on in perpetuity, right?
They do.
I think, when did we adopt the one we have now?
1947? I don't know. That's what
47?
Former Senator Lemke was always really good about keeping us up to date on constitutional.
Was he around when they did that one?
I don't know. You know, he liked to talk about it a lot. Remember, he'd get that book out and say, Senator, have you read this book?
$500,000 today won't be worth much in like,
well, no. I want to be really clear. It's $500,000 for the next 50 minutes.
But who's counting?
5:10, it goes to 4:50.
What?
At 5:10, it goes to 4:50.
Oh, at 5:10?
Yeah. Every hour.
Write that down.
Every hour. Nope. It's kind of the general rule of thumb. But the senator from the 10th brought up a valid point, which I thought was very good. She said, at some point, we get all the way to zero. So for her, being that it's our last year, we're in term limits, et cetera, I'm willing to stop at 350. So we'll ratchet down a $50,000 a year for the next each hour, and then when we get to 350, you know, being the good guy that I am and try to get along with the senator from Phelps, we'll stop there for you and the senator from the 10th. So it's really in everybody's benefit just to go ahead and get this done right now, just to sit down.
I would love to get it done right now. It's just a matter of, you know, give and take.
It is. So are we giving and taking anywhere, or what's going on?
It doesn't seem like anybody wants to give and take, and right now we're the only
one.
Yeah.
It's amazing. As you know, you've been here a long time.
Seems like just yesterday.
Well, what was it, 4 years ago?
Well,
no, 6 years ago.
This is my fifth session.
It's your fifth session. Yeah, okay. That's right. Your predecessor went to prison. So 5 years, as you know, as we work through these things, often that give and take occurs, and I would like to believe that there's someone somewhere working on giving and taking. So,
I don't disagree with your concept so much here, because a lot of things don't happen until we, as the former senator from Cape says. Now we're in the deep end of the pool, right?
That is right.
Yeah, we're trying to. Now's when things start to gel.
Isn't it ironic how many members of here all of a sudden are quoting the former senator from Cape?
Yeah. Well, he was.
I don't remember anybody wanting to quote him when he was here.
Most people kind of looked the other way, didn't they?
They did. My favorite quote of his was, "The window of ignorance is closing."
I.
So
I agree. That's a remarkable quote.
So here's what we're doing. We are putting before the people of the state the opportunity for them to decide. I actually believe that if you look at the court case that created this situation we're in, I actually believe we have a constitutional fix we need to do. I don't think our fix
is
statutory. And I think that to do that, whether the dollar amount is in or not in, I think the people are going to have to make the decision that, yes, the legislature has the authority to do this, or the people could say, no, you don't. And then we live in this world that we're currently in. And so I actually think that's the only way to bring resolution, true resolution to it. Because after the court case threw them out based on constitutional provisions.
Yeah, yeah. And if I remember the court case, it was about the overall gist of the ruling was failure they were excluded from having a trial by the jury or something like that.
That was another component, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's the part that I remember. It's been some time since I read
it. Right. It was like 2012 fall of 12 or something. So it's been a while, as a senator, in fairness. But I just remember at the time looking at it, thinking to myself, this isn't something that the legislature can go fix statutorily. This is going to have to be something the legislature gives to the people and the people decide.
Well, I don't
like that idea.
I didn't say I liked it.
You're with me on that.
I am open to it.
All right. But hey, that's the first step.
You know what? That's why we're here.
That's right. Keep following, my friend.
Anybody,
the eyes will open.
Anybody can go to the sides and stay there, but you got to get to the middle and dance, right?
Yeah, that's right. I kind of feel like I'm even further to the middle. I mean, I'm kind of almost to the left here. I mean, the cap's way higher than
what. Buchanan is starting to look up at you, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying that, I mean, 500,000, that is a really, really high limit.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. You know, I've got an amendment to your amendment.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't want the senator from Phelps to feel like he's being singled out.
I understand.
I'm going to raise your cap to $1.2 million.
Uh-huh.
No, just to $1 million also, not to $1.2 million.
Oh, okay. You're not going to 1.2.
No, I'm going to $1 million.
Got it.
We try to stay consistent. Otherwise, we get those little pink slips when we pass stuff. President?
Senator from the 4th.
I have an amendment to the amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It has not been distributed, but it's short, and I ask that it be read.
It will be read. Madam Secretary, will you please read the amendment?
Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment Number 1, offered by Senator Kevney. Amend Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Substitute Senate Joint Resolution 25, page 1, line 6, by striking the words, quote, 500,000, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, 1 million, end quote, and further amend lines 11 through 12 by striking the words, quote, 500,000, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, 1 million, end quote.
Senator, do you move for its adoption?
Yes, Mr. President, I move for the adoption.
Senator from the 4th moves for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 1 of Senate Substitute to SJR 25. Any senator wishing to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 11th, for what purpose do you rise?
Yeah, I would like to inquire of the Senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, when we were on the previous bill, you had a similar amendment. And you made an interesting point that I would like to have some clarification on. How do caps translate to lower insurance premiums for doctors? I think you were asking that question. With your amendment, each of your amendments, are you saying that they do have an impact or not have an impact?
No, I don't know the answer to that, and no one has been able to explain that to me. In my mind, there are a number of factors that weigh into the determination of insurance rates, losses being probably the predominant factor.
Right.
Just like your car insurance. If you have a lot of accidents and they have to pay out a lot, your car insurance is going to go up until they finally cancel it. Now, along with that, there are other risk factors. With car insurance, speeding tickets, DWIs, things like that, those all move your rate because you're a bad risk. No one's explained to me what the other risks are. In your car insurance, there's no caps.
Right.
know.
Right.
So,
well, I haven't heard anyone explain, and I know you were having a good inquiry with the senator from Buchanan, and maybe I missed that. Maybe he was explaining that a little bit. But really, in truth, if we accepted your amendment, we are at $1 million instead of no cap at all.
Right. It is
so if you believe in the idea that a cap can lower the rates, then you have a very good amendment, Senator.
That's right.
Because it's there. And the senator from Andrew wants to every hour lower it. I'm wondering how many more doctors, how much more lower will their insurance rates go every hour? I mean, if that's the determining factor, we should all get behind your amendment right now. Have a cap.
Pick it up and pass it.
Have it reasonable. Pass it. Move on with another topic.
I agree. I mean, caps are an arbitrary number.
Right.
Insurance companies don't normally do arbitrary things. It's all reasoned out. So I don't know why caps are such a determinant here. And at least if we're going to have a cap, we ought to have a cap that you know, the people that are injured the worst at least get some kind of...
Right. We would have a cap with your amendment. We would have a cap that would help those who are harmed, but also it would be a cap that if you buy the idea that that this would give relief to the insurance companies, then it would. You do both things with your amendment, Senator. I would think there should be 32 of us high-fiving you and say you solved our problem and let's get this done. But for some reason, there's a big problem between $1 million and $500,000. And I don't quite understand the difference between those two. Can you help me with that, or do I need to inquire?
Well, you know, I can't, but I will commend the senator from Andrew a little bit, because at least he went from 350 to 500 right away. Now, you know, it's kind of like, you know, going over a ditch. You can't get there in two short steps. You got to take one big one.
Right.
But he hasn't learned that yet. We need to work on that.
Now, with your amendment, I'm wondering if at 510, would you be willing to do 900,000?
No, we're going to 1,000,001.
1,000,001, we go the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going up.
Right. So we're about 500,000 between. You mentioned before 750,000 as a number that maybe equated to the 1986 number, or what? I forget.
Yeah, it was like 1980. Was it 86? Yeah, I think it was. Well, yeah, but I think we capped it. If we had put a COLA in when we instituted the 350,000.
28 years ago is when that happened. Yeah.
Then it would be just short of 700,000 right now. So 750,000 is a good number.
Well, maybe we can get the senator from Andrew and your amendment together to 750,000.
You know,
or if he'd be interested in that.
We're approaching infinity in both the negative and the positive ends here.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 11th?
I'd like to inquire the senator from Buchanan.
Senator from where?
Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, I think you were having an inquiry with the senator from the 4th talking about that relationship between the cap and how that actually lowers insurance rates. And were you talking about that? Because I didn't hit the details, but I am curious on knowing that. I haven't heard that, and maybe I think you have information that can maybe help me a little bit.
Well, it's kind of like, imagine that you were trying to repair Ferraris instead of Chevys.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't cost as much to repair Chevys as it does Ferraris. So if you had everybody driving Ferraris, your insurance rates would be way higher, wouldn't it? Because the total outlay of repairing them would be higher. Well, if you pay less because there's a cap, it's more like driving the Chevys. The total outlay is a lot less, so you don't have to pay as much insurance. It's just a simple way of looking at
it. Okay, so from the time that, and I know you walked through this in we've dealt with this issue when we were in the House, when we first came in together. You mentioned that Governor Holden's objection to it, and then Governor Blunt signed a bill. And then there was a Supreme Court case that got rid of the caps. So from the times that we implemented caps to the time that the Supreme Court said no caps, how much did rates fall? Or
Well, I think maybe, I'm guessing 20, 30%, something like that.
Okay.
The thing is, it's quite variable depending on the specialty that you're talking about. The specialties that, like, for neurosurgery and OB, boy, it came down a lot more than that.
It even more than 20%?
Oh, yeah, because those are the ones that were, you know, the high flyers. The thing is that, you know, if you have a dozen cases where the judgment is more than the cap, to the degree that they're more than the cap, the total outlay would be less by that much for those dozen cases, and that's going to save the insurance.
Well, that's if you have cases. I mean, you're not going to every year have the same amount of cases either.
Well, no, I'm just
saying. You know what I mean?
The
risk is there, I guess.
For whatever number of claims that there are where the jury comes back and says to give more than the cap, by that amount, the total outlay would be less, and so the premiums could
be less. I understand that. I guess what I'm asking the question is, did we see that happen? And you're telling me it did. You mentioned around, and I'm not going to hold you exactly these numbers. I'm just not as familiar with this area.
I'm just telling you kind of my impression.
But the sense of it, they did drop, is what you're saying.
They did.
Okay. And since the time that there were caps and the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, those are unconstitutional, have we seen them go back up?
Not really yet. But you have to remember that there's a big time lag. There was a time lag after the caps went away, and there'll be a time lag. I mean, after the caps came back, you know, there was a time lag. So, I mean, they didn't just immediately drop by that much after we signed tort reform.
Uh-huh.
They kind of, like, trended down. And now, you know, they're going to start probably trending back up.
Unless, that's your thought, unless we deal with
this. Yeah, there's a timeline because of the number of years that it takes for bad cases to wind their way through the system.
Okay. Another question. And I'm just asking you because you're more familiar than me. Have those insurance companies, have they been steadily increasing money, or when we had the times of no caps, they were losing money as well? Not only the idea of charging higher premiums to the docs, but also losing money in their business. Did we see that happen too?
The thing about it is that you don't see, like, very smooth trend lines in this business. You see kind of a 1 year be up, 1 year to be down, 1 year to be up, 1 year to be down. And you just kind of have to draw the line. It's kind of like the stock market, you know? I mean, there's so much variability. There may be a whole bunch of cases that go to trial this year and hardly any the next year.
But if that's the case, then how can we say that we have to have a cap to lower premiums?
Well, because we know that some of those cases will have juries come back with high awards. I mean, we know they will. I mean, anybody knows that they will. If they don't have a cap on there, then there will be juries that come back with gigantic awards. And that will have
to be... Well, I guess maybe that's the leap that I don't see. Where's the leap? Where's that proof that either has happened or not happened?
Well, because
I guess I've always thought about this idea is that we want to do what we can to make sure those doctors are in our area, especially like our areas, your area, my area, when we're so close to the state line and they could set up practice easily. But I always wondered what's the real effect? And why don't we say insurance companies stop raising the rates?
Well, because
they have to make money.
Well, no, Senator, you understand, don't you, that the premiums that the insurance company collects have to exceed the amount of outlay for the indemnity and the defense costs. I mean, they have to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take in enough premium to pay all the expenses and to pay the pay off the plaintiffs that win. You have to. So in states where there are no caps, there are higher jury awards. In states where there are lower caps, there are lower jury awards. It's just that that is the way it is. And if we want to go back to the days of 2000 when doctors were leaving the state, that's what's going to happen if we don't get these caps put back in place.
Well, but see, I guess I'm still in my mind trying to equate caps with insurance rates with doctors leaving.
Okay, well,
I can see insurance rates go high, doctors leave.
Yeah. But can you see that without caps, insurance rates are going to go higher?
Well, I've seen that they have gone higher, but I don't see that the insurance companies are running, they're going out of business themselves. They just don't want to make it.
Oh, okay, now I want to touch on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so now one thing about insurance companies. Now this applies to life insurance, health insurance, automobile insurance, medical malpractice insurance, fire insurance, every kind of insurance.
Okay.
Insurance companies, per se, they don't care what the outlay is.
Right.
They just increase their premiums to cover it. They always just increase their premiums. If the cost is really low, they can lower their premiums. If the cost is really high, they can raise them. The difference is, in this case, is that, like with my company, it's the doctors that own the company. See, we are the company.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to keep the doctors in the state, so we got to keep the premiums down.
Right.
But you know, like with the health insurance company, with regard to this is what I've been saying on the floor. You've heard me say it multiple times. Like when there's a mandate, an insurance mandate for
right.
like healthcare, the insurance companies they always cry, "Oh, that's going to make us raise." They don't really care. They would just assume the rates be high because they make more money.
Yeah. Is there another way to go after that mentality as opposed to, having them have, and I think there's some that have record profits. Meanwhile, they raise premiums on doctors who are just trying to help patients.
Well, see, in our case, we are the insurance company, so we want the rates to be low.
Right,
because
is it fair to say that in your case you may be different from other insurance companies?
I'm sorry, say again.
Would you say you're a little more different because of
the
fact?
Well, that's because we're owned by the doctors.
Yeah.
Insure, right. And so we are different. But the thing is
maybe we make all insurance all these.
We as legislators. I'm talking about us as legislators.
Uh-huh.
We as legislators, we want the patients to be taken care of,
right.
So therefore we want doctors
Absolutely.
In Missouri. So therefore we don't want the rates to go so high that they'll be driving doctors to go to other states.
Right.
Which has happened. I mean, it very clearly happened.
Well,
talk to any neurosurgeon in Kansas City area, they'll
yes,
say, we're moving to Kansas.
And I completely agree on that goal. The question I still have is how caps relate to that, and is there something else we should be doing?
Well, let's just say that you are insuring one doctor and that one doctor gets sued.
Okay.
And, let's take the case of there is a cap. The cap is $350,000. That you charge the doctor the premium, and it's $350,000. Let's just say that there is no cap, and the judgment is $1 million. You got to charge that doctor $1 million. The cap made the difference. Now, just...
Yeah, but what if I have doctors that... Let's say I have 10 doctors and I don't have any suits, and I haven't for years.
We like
do I
that.
Do I still need to?
That's what we want.
I still need to raise their premiums.
You understand
because of the
that the cost above the cap gets spread out to all the doctors. That's the answer.
Because the insurance companies do that through premiums.
Well, you
right?
The reason why do you buy car insurance? You buy car insurance because if you have an accident and it was your fault. And you caused $1 million worth of damage, you don't want to
right.
go bankrupt.
Right.
And why do you insure your house? Because if it burns down, you can't afford a new house.
Right.
So you want to spread the cost out among everyone else. Well, that's what doctors do. They just are spreading the cost out
I understand. I completely understand that. I just,
Well, by lowering, by putting the cap on there, it lowers the total cost that you're spreading out.
Well, that's the point where I'm wondering what other things we should be doing.
Oh, well,
by this only solution that we talk about.
Oh, I agree that there are other things that we could do, but this is like a big one.
Okay, this is a okay. Well, that I appreciate that. That relationship is really important in our discussion. It's really important between, I think, 1 million and 500,000 and 500,000 and 450 in half an hour or whatever it may be.
Senator, I want to make sure that you understand this.
Okay.
A common amount that doctors insure themselves for is $1 million, and that's in every state in the union.
Okay.
And so if you set this cap at $1 million, the entire $1 million of your insurance policy could go just to pay for non-economic damages, which is pain and suffering. There wouldn't be any left over to pay the economic damages, which that could be $1 million too. So the thing is, $1 million is too high. It's just too high. It won't work. You need to have it less. And $500,000 is a reasonable amount. Very reasonable.
And
then you'd have $500,000 of room to pay the economic damages, $500,000 of room to pay the non-economic damages. Hey, now you're in the ballpark, you know?
Okay. Well, I appreciate your input. I really do. I really appreciate your experience, your thoughtfulness on that, and done my inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
We are on Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Substitute to SJR 25. Any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 7th, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I inquire of the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
Proceed.
Okay. One of the questions that I have is if the senator from the 12th believes that this is the only way forward, does that mean that we are done talking about House Bill 1173, since it's a statutory change? I mean, by the admission that will not fix the problem, do you think we'll return to that once the point of order has been determined, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, there are, of course, differing points of view on that, and I frankly made a similar point myself this morning that, you know, 1173 arguably attempts a statutory fix to a constitutional problem. Whether that flies or not is a question that only 7 people in our state can answer, and they work across the street, not in this building. So we will see. That said, I have to tell you for reasons that I won't articulate at great length, but I would prefer to see if we can get this worked out on a statutory basis possible.
Does the Senate Joint Resolution number 25, as I read, it's a very short bill, at 500,000, but I don't see any. Is there a substitute that has?
Let's see here. I'm looking at amendment. Do I have a substitute here?
I was just told that it was an amendment, so I'm going to search for that here on my desk.
I think it's the amendment. If I'm not mistaken, it's the amendment ending 0.02S, offered by the senator from
Ottawa. I got it. Now we're on a new amendment to the amendment from the senator from the 4th.
Right.
Which takes it to $1 million.
Got it. So we have this in any action. It's a health care provider, damages for personal injury or death. No plan shall cover more than $500,000 for non-economic damages. And we have an amendment take that from $250,000 to $1 million, with the thought being that this would go in our state constitution on the SJR in the event voters should approve it. So that's where we are?
That's where we are. So we're in the. I don't know if you were in here when the senator from the 12th had said that he was going to offer 500,000, and then for every hour that ticked by, he was going to reduce 500,000 by $50,000.
Right.
Until the beginning, zero. But then, based on his inquiry with the senator from the 10th, he was going to stop at 350 because of them being the last folks out the door this year.
The last what out the door?
The last two, the most senior senators that are leaving this year. Out of that good faith, he was going to stop at 350, which I thought was very gracious of the information. But then the senator from the 4th offered $1 million and said that for every hour we have to stand on the floor, it's going to raise $100,000.
And so. I appreciate that approach, although I have to say the senator from the 4th seems to have an obsession with the number
$1 million. It's like he likes saying that in his inner monologue voice in like a Dr. Evil kind of $1 million kind of way. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's why he's fixated on that number or not. I personally think that.
Well, maybe like the senator from Franklin, he's on the verge of being a millionaire, and so that he just stuck there. Oh, the senator from Franklin is on the verge of being a billionaire. I'm sorry, that was the line. We're not out here when he that if you say something often enough, then maybe it'll come true, and so he's going to.
Got it.
On the verge of being a billionaire.
I think $1 million is too high. I think 500 is
low.
Too low. I think that there needs to be some recognition for inflation.
No cola in the amendment from the senator from the 12th, right? As you read it.
No, there's not. Is there a cola amendment in the amendment?
That's from a good the senator from the 4th. Is there a cola? No, there's no cola in. The senator from the 4th Amendment.
Guys just don't care much about inflation.
Well, I think that it would take a while. It'd be nice to have a calculator to figure out if we set it at, what is it today, that it would have been at 680 if we just left it alone from 28 years ago. 680, how long would it take us to get to a million? What kind of time frame would be built into there if it was adjusted for?
Well, I mean, 680 is almost double what it was 28 years ago, so... it would only need to increase by another 50%, and it's increased 200% over that time period. So I would say that that might be about 6 or 7 years, possibly, depending on what CPI would be in that time. Now, it could be a lot more than that. For the third time in 2 days, inflation's been pretty low in recent years, but that certainly can change.
What's your take on the two-tiered system, where you have 950 for catastrophic and death, and then you have 550, 600.
Some other number.
For everything else.
I think that a two-tier approach is worth considering.
We did something like that on the second injury fund.
We did. We actually, I think, did a three-tier approach there. We had a special category for mesothelioma. We had an enhanced remedy for occupational diseases that were more likely to be fatal or to cause serious persistent and or fatal illnesses, and we had sort of the base tier for claims that are likely to be, I think, if memory serves, and I'm sure it doesn't, somewhere under 50,000, I think, in the case of second injury fund. What I would say is this. I think that, with the two-tier system, I think the majority of cases are likely to fall in the non-wrongful death, non-catastrophic category. And so the benefit of having two tiers is that you have a lower cap on those claims. That's going to be most of those claims. And so you might actually save quite a bit of money than if you have a single cap somewhere between the two, just because of the incidence of the claims. Now, you're always going to have situations where you have catastrophic or death claims that would exceed the value of the cap. And those folks are going to get cut off. That's the downside to having a cap, or one of the downsides. On the other hand, the higher your cap is, in some ways there can be an effect driving up the value, the settlement value of even fairly run-of-the-mill claims. So, there's an argument to be made that most people will get the best recovery at the least burden under a two-tier system, and that everybody wins in that scenario. But obviously not everybody sees it that way.
Well, and here's my frustration. We went through this same debate last year. It's a little bit of Groundhog Day. But the fact of the matter is, the truth is, and I want both sides to hear this, I want to get something done.
I strongly agree.
I have doctors in my district that I respect and appreciate their efforts, and I want to provide them some protection against, a settlement that might drive them out of the state. Right. And I think that doctor flight could be a potential concern, especially in my district where we have Kansas right next door that would, in our border war conflict, would love to see folks move out of my district. So for them, I want to get something done. But on the other hand, and this was really articulated well last year when you and I had the same debate, there's an issue of fairness for those who are injured for no fault of their own.
Right.
And so we are so close. The senator from the 12th offers $500,000. I've been told that for the 950 on the catastrophic and death down to 550 for everything else, if we can't strike it at 650, with a cola, and just, and you know, agree as senators that look, $6.50 and a cola, regardless of what the people outside of this chamber have to say about it. Where, why? I mean, it's frustrating.
Sure,
it's frustrating that we cannot come to an agreement when we're so close. And the consequences of not doing so is, again, no cap, no protection, and that's not something that we want to do either.
No, I agree. And you know, look, while the two of us are out here talking, you know, I'd say this, you know, somebody can drop a substitute amendment. You can drop one. I can drop one on whatever number at this point, but right, procedurally in order, unless I'm going to demonstrate further my relatively short tenure in this chamber, as I did last week on my attempt to offer an amendment, substitute amendment to an amendment. But regardless, I think that can happen. And I think as you and I are out here talking, my guess is probably one or more people somewhere else in the building talking about this very issue as well. And I certainly hope so too. That said, I think I told the story last year. I mean, this issue is one that's close to home for me. It's so close to home, it was actually my next-door neighbor. My next-door neighbor had a brother who had actually had a pretty substantial birth injury. He had the cord had been wrapped around his neck when he was born, and he had a number of very substantial developmental disabilities that arose from that. And that's not the malpractice claim I'm going to talk about. 45, 50 years later, he had a diseased left kidney, I believe, and he went in to get his left kidney removed, 75% bad, 25% good, and he woke up from the table without a right kidney. Removed the wrong one. He had one that was good, one that was bad, and they took out the good one. And he's not with us anymore. He died not long after that. He might have been in his late 50s, young 60s, but actuarially speaking, there's no reason why he would not have had many, many years left to live, and he was able to get a second surgery at a different hospital on the diseased kidney to try to alleviate the situation. But it's a situation where, quite frankly, a doctor's mistake cut years and possibly decades off of his life. And it's you know, and he had to live the last years of his life knowing that. And, you know, we talk about non-economic damages, you know, apart from pain and suffering of having 0.25 good kidneys when you were supposed to still have one, the mental anguish of living the last few years of your much, much shorter life knowing that somebody's mistake was the reason you were going to live two more years and not 20.
And when did this happen to this gentleman?
It's been within the last, he passed away maybe 2 years ago, and this happened maybe 4, maybe 5 years ago.
So had the 2005 caps been put in place at that point in time?
Yes.
So after legal fees and all that other, the $350,000, you know, probably didn't make it to the end of his life. I mean, that's what we're talking about with catastrophic and death being another tier, because it's not a common occurrence that does happen. But when it does happen, you have a different level of trauma and challenge than you do with the normal. And by the way, we're talking about personal stories. It's hard to prove medical malpractice. My mother-in-law had ankle surgery, and the stitches were left in her ankle, and they became infected, and it affected the next 6 to 9 months of her life, being unable to walk. And that was a mistake. She talked to an attorney. The attorney went through and said, look, you know, leaving stitches in your ankle is a mistake, but it's not a mistake that raises to the level of malicious conduct or that malpractice that would justify bringing a case forward. And so she just lost those 6 to 9 months and didn't pursue any legal remedy because the standard is relatively high to prove that. And so just from a personal circumstance of where 9 months of 6 to 9 months of her life not being able to be recovered because of a mistake, leaving someone's ankle is a mistake, and was not pursued for legal recourse because it's not easy to bring a medical malpractice case in front of the courts.
Unfortunately, most doctors on most days with most patients meet that care and exceed it.
Right. And let's be honest, too, there are a lot of doctors that work in hospitals that have unfavorable working hours. They work them for long periods of time. The same with nurse staffs. And when you haven't slept for 20 hours and you're at the end of your shift, you're asked to do a complicated procedure. This is not about blame. And mistakes are made because of a host of reasons. It could be sleep deprivation. It could be, you know, you were trying to go too fast, speed, to get to something else. I mean, we need our doctors. We need our doctors. There's no question that any one of us who gets hurt or we have a child that gets hurt or we fall sick, the first person that we want to see is a person in a white lab coat who's going to say, I'm here to help you to make it okay. And I don't care who you are, I don't care what party you're in, I don't care what state you live in. That's a fact. I don't think there's any lack of appreciation for them being. But there also has to be a remedy for when those mistakes are made in order to try to bring a sense of responsibility to not making those mistakes. And if those ramifications weren't in place, then you wouldn't have the natural pressures to do a better job. So this is all a delicate balance between the legal system and the doctors and the patients and ultimately sometimes the provider of the hospitals. So everybody plays a role in this system. What we're trying to do is make sure that the balance between those players is reasonable and it's effective. And that's, I believe, why we're trying to strike this balance.
Right. Well, I agree with you about that, and I am of the impression that the senator from the 5th may want to lend her thoughts on this debate. Why don't I maybe let you inquire of her next, but I appreciate you taking the time to inquire of me, Senator.
Okay, thank you. Not me last time. President.
Senator from the 7th, what purposes do you inquire?
I'm going to inquire real briefly of the senator from the 5th.
Senator from the 5th, do you yield? Proceed.
Senator, did you before I turn the floor over, did you want to inquire?
Yeah, I would like to inquire another.
When I come back after what I was doing.
Senator from the 7th, we are on Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment to the Senate Substitute for SJR 25. Any other senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 5th, for what purpose do you rise?
I would like to inquire Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Senator, good evening. How are you? Senator?
Yes?
How are you this evening?
I was having a hard time hearing you, Senator. Not very well.
Okay. Now?
A little better, yeah.
So, Senator, you are of the mindset that we need to put caps on non-economical damages, correct?
Yes.
Had the opportunity to look at the Supreme Court ruling that brought us here this evening?
I have.
The Watts versus Cots Medical Center?
Yes.
And
I'm not an expert on it. It's been quite a while since I read it, but I did.
Well, let me just read you the facts, okay? And this is real. This is not, you know, out of the sky type of situation here that we're dealing with.
I have already read that. I mean, I know that there was a case and that.
Let me just read it to you so that others can hear it that may not have had the opportunity to read the case. So on October the 30th, in 2006, when she was approximately, we're talking about Watts. When she was approximately 36 weeks pregnant, Ms. Watts went to a clinic associated with Cox because she was experiencing cramping, and because she detected decrease in fatal movement. Okay? Dr. Harmon, who was then a third-year medical resident, examined Watts. The evidence at the trial indicated that Dr. Harmon did not perform appropriate tests, failed to notify Watts of the significance of the decreased fatal movement, and failed to perform any further diagnostic monitoring. Okay? Dr. Harmon's supervisor, Dr. Kelly, signed off on
Dr. Harmon's findings. Okay? I'm just bringing you up to speed on this. On November 1st, 2006, Watts was admitted to the hospital due to lack of fetal movement. I'm sorry. Watts was placed on a fetal monitor at 9 a.m. Watts expert, Dr. Robert, testified that this diagnostic monitoring indicated fetal hyperoxic. You familiar with that term? And acidosis, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And that the standard of care required immediately a C-section, a caesarean section delivered. Okay? Are you following me?
I think so.
Okay. Dr. Green, the second-year medical resident who was examining Watts, did not begin the C-section until 10:45. Nathan Watts was born with a catastrophic brain injury. That's why we're here. We're here because a kid, as a result of medical malpractice, we are here because a kid is dealing with brain damage today. And I'm saying, how can we put a value on a kid who has to live the rest of his life brain dead? I mean, truly, how could we begin to even think the thought of trying to put a damage on something of this magnitude? This young child would be brain damaged, would have brain damage for the rest of his life. And what you're saying is that $500,000 is all he should receive.
May I respond?
Huh?
May I respond?
Sure.
Right. You know, here's the situation, that our world is not perfect. Bad things happen. And I have to tell you that resident, he didn't go to work that day thinking, I'm going to hurt somebody. He went to work that day thinking, I'm going to try to help somebody. And I have to point out to you that on the flip side of this coin, if we don't have a neurosurgeon available to take care of your friend when your friend has a motor vehicle accident and they get taken to the hospital and there's no neurosurgeon there to operate to remove the blood clot from their brain, and your friend dies or has a severe brain injury that affects them for the rest of their life, then that, on the flip side of this coin, is just as bad as what happened to that child. And there's a tension, there's a balance that we have to find here in the legislature. And I just have to tell you, I understand the point that you're trying to make, that here was a bad case.
Yeah, and it was a bad case.
But at the same time, if we don't do something about this problem, we're going to have that other thing happen.
Like
where
what?
They go to the hospital and there won't even be an OB doctor there. There won't even be an OB doctor.
Oh, there will always be OB doctors.
And the thing is, you're like,
Senator, again, do you think we should put a limit on a kid who has to live with being brain dead for the rest of his life?
You know, what we have to do is we have to pay all of the economic damages for that child. And then we have to put an amount that we as society can afford to pay him. Because if we make that amount too big for the non-economic damages, then we won't have doctors to take care of him.
But how can you put a value on that, though?
There's no way to put a reasonable value on a baby who has to live the rest of his life. I just have to
brain
say
dead.
That.
I mean,
is not
there's
a
no
perfect
value
world,
to that.
Senator, this is not a perfect world. We have to find a number that works for us.
Okay, and I agree with it. Let's deal with the numbers. So after the trial, the jury returned a verdict. After the trial.
Three senators standing. Senator from Atchison, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask my amendment be sent back.
That amendment will be sent back.
Mr. President.
Senator from Atchison.
The hour of opportunity having expired.
It is now 5:10. I have a new amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It is being distributed now.
Do you ask for the waiver of its reading?
I would request a waiver of the reading. I would move for the adoption.
Do you care to explain?
I would like to, Mr. President.
Please do.
What this amendment does, this amendment here, says is that it essentially, whenever we are talking about attorney's fees, this would set the total amount of attorney's fees at no more than 10% of what is awarded. And so with that, Mr. President, I have an amendment to the amendment.
Please send the amendment to the amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It is being distributed. I would request a waiver of the reading.
If the reading will be waived, do you move for its adoption?
I'd like to move for its adoption. And, Mr. President,
please explain.
Keeping with my commitment, we are now, the underlying amendment sets attorney's fees at 10%, and the amendment to the amendment sets the overall caps at $450,000. It is now 5:12. I would move for the adoption and reset the clock.
Senator moves for the adoption of the Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 2 to Senate Substitute for SJR 25. Any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 1st, for what purpose do you rise?
Present to inquire of the senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, what did you do this last weekend?
Got to think about it for a minute.
You know, the Royals season has begun, hasn't it?
I went to a soccer game. It was scouting day at the K on Sunday.
Was it really? Oh, you know, I thought you had a Facebook post on that.
I took my son to the Royals game. We didn't win. It was actually close all the way to the end, and then the White Sox busted out like 5 runs in the 9th, and that wasn't great. But
bullpen problems.
But the boys had a good time. We got to walk the track. It was the first time that I'd ever actually had to walk around the track, and you know, pretended for a moment as if a fly ball had been hit to the wall and got to, you know, do that. Took a lot of good pictures. I don't know. Were you in scouts at all?
You know, I was a Cub Scout, made it through Wheat Blows and got into other activities and did not advance in that. But you know what? I actually walked around on the field at then Royals Stadium when it had not AstroTurf, but Tartan Turf. Which had through the 1985 season, I think it had to have been like 110 degrees on the day that I was out there. And it was like this felt-like material. It was like a dark green felt, not AstroTurf, but the heat rising off of it was absolutely stifling. I was there like the middle of the day, of course.
Yeah.
Because there's no game going on. They don't have folks on the field when batting practice begins or whatever. But it was as just impossibly hot out there, and I had to have been, you know, it's funny, it had to have been 1983 when I was 9, because one of the guys that I was there with, like a camp group that went to tour, one of the guys that I was there with had a Walkman, and he was listening to Billy Idol's Eyes Without a Face, Rebel Yell, he had that album in, and he... I vividly remember that. It was the one time I got to the field at
Royal
Stadium.
Well, I'm hoping the Scouts also remember. We had a gorgeous day. It was lightly overcast, so we didn't have a lot of sun. But it was, you know, about 65 degrees, and it was a really good day for baseball. Walking on the track, you saw how well manicured the grass was. There's a lot of effort that goes into the greenskeeping.
I keep forgetting there's grass there now. I've seen it. I've only been back maybe once or twice since they went to grass. I know it's terrible.
The scouts from stepping on it, even though we told them don't step on the grass, they just, you know, 8-year-old, 9-year-old boys, they just could not help themselves but to violate the rules and step on it. And
well, I would think, given your propensity for...
Of rule breaking?
Well, no, for sustainability.
All right.
Logical responsibility, you would have been particularly dismayed to see your den of scouts stomping on the grass.
You know, and this is a well-known fact for those who visit the K frequently, but that Kansas City Power and Light put a bank of solar panels in the outfield. There's 25 kW of solar panels in the outfield. It's got a really nice sign. It's very visible. I keep waiting for a home run ball to take out one of the panels. but was really, really happy and proud of that, you know, our utility company did that.
You know, the last time I was out at Kauffman Stadium, I actually nearly got hit by a batting practice home run ball. I was out in the bleachers in left field where they kind of added in. There's like a little event space now back there, and our firm's commercial litigation department had a firm-wide retreat. Part of it was we were in the conference center there in the guest and entertainment space there at the back during the day. And I had to take a phone call, and so here I am, you know, out on my phone in the middle of left field. I think Interleague Baseball, the Brewers were in town, and I nearly got hit by a home run ball in batting practice. I wasn't paying attention, but it rattled around in the seats. It was quite disturbing sound, actually, when I wasn't expecting it.
So what's the most vivid memory that you have from being out at the K? You know, by the way, the Royals are playing this afternoon and doing quite well. Last time left the game, it was 7-1.
Are the Brewers in town again, or are they already Interleague, or who?
Tampa Bay.
Rays, that's right. Rays.
So what's your most vivid memory of being at Kauffman Stadium? Is there a game that sticks out that, you know, you can remember the end of, or a great pitching performance or something like that?
You know, it's funny. I remember that game. The Royals pitcher, who was not terribly heralded, I forget his name, he actually took a no-hitter into the sixth that night. But the game that I remember most, just because it was something I had never seen before, again, this would have been in the early 80s, and the Blue Jays were in town. And at the time, Jorge Horta played for the Blue Jays. It was before he came to the Royals and became a DH platoon with Hal McRae in 85. And so Horta, it went into extra innings. I think it was the first extra innings game that I had ever been to. And I think it wound up like 4-2 or something. I may have that wrong. But the Horta... in extra innings, maybe the 10th inning, Horta gets a base hit. There's a throwing error. Horta's pretty fast. He winds up on second on a throwing error to the first baseman, comes around to score later in the inning. In the bottom of the inning, the Royals aren't able to score. And, like, at the minute the last out was recorded, the lights in the stadium went dark. Like, all the lights shut off. I mean, it was just dark as night. All of a sudden, like, a second after the game ended, and I really wasn't expecting that. I don't know if it was because it was extra innings. Maybe Casey Pianello could have used some better solar panels out in the outfield at that time, but I was just surprised to see a game end in extra innings and to see the lights go off instantly.
Maybe it was the fireworks display, because sometimes on a Friday night, as soon as the game's in, the lights go out, and then here come the fireworks.
No, well, unfortunately, because the home team lost, no fireworks. And that was actually before they had fireworks there.
I see.
That was way back in the day. But, of course, little did I know that, Orta's role in Royals baseball lore would not be confined to that evening. But
I was actually a season ticket holder for a few years. During the really down times, the dark ages for the Royals, we lost over 100 games for 4 or 5 years in a row. Two of those years, I had 40-game packages that I went out there quite a bit.
Well-timed.
Yeah. That's true loyalty there.
It is. I commend you.
Night after night for a team that loses 100 ball games. But one night, this might have been in the 2004, I can't remember, maybe 2006 season. We were playing the Detroit Tigers, and it's actually gotten some play on ESPN after the fact because it was a nice moment. We came back and tied the game, and it was the bottom of the 10th, and the rain had just started coming down. And I could tell that, this was going to be it. They were going to pull the tarps, and, they're going to do something because the rain was starting to come. So it opened up. The heavens opened, and the rain came down. And Ken Harvey, I don't know if you remember Ken Harvey. He was the first baseman at the time.
Yep.
Famous for getting hit in the back by a line drive because he turned. But he's at the plate, and there's two men on, and there's two out. And it's the bottom of the 10th, and the rain's coming down, and we just know the game's going to be over. It had been going late. And he got into one, and he drove it into the upper deck of the left field outfield plaza and into the game on a walk-off home run. And I remember being grateful that we had won, being grateful that we were able to run to the car with the rain coming down as hard as it was. And it's funny because you have those moments where you remember, exactly where you are when all of this transpires. And I've got just a lot of fond memories of being out at Kauffman Stadium and watching the Royals, despite the the run of lack of success that we had for the years. Because baseball is baseball, and any night you can come home a winner. and it's unfortunate that we haven't made the playoffs in as long as we have. But this year, we've got a great group of young players that have played together now for a couple seasons. They retained Ned Yost. Our pitching staff, while I was really disappointed we didn't sign Carlos Santana, I really thought we should have. He got a $14 million contract with the Atlanta Braves. We had paid him $12 million last year. He had a 3.24 ERA. There was no reason why not to bring him back. Now, Jason Vargas may end up being a good replacement for that production. But could you imagine if we would have brought him back in addition to Vargas and Shields pitching well, Bruce Chen can go out there and throw a gem. So I was really hoping that we would retain Santana's services, and we didn't. But I think we're 500 if we held on and won the day. We're playing 500 baseball, and for the Royals, we'll get hot and we'll catch a streak. And then, just like last year, we finished with 86 wins, long time since we broke 500.
Yep, once since 91, in fact. I think the 2003 season with Tony
and that was
Pena.
The year. So funny story about that is Mike Sweeney, who used to be one of my favorite players, just a good person, a good baseball player too, real scrappy player. He was in a contract, and the contract stipulated if Royals ever played 500 baseball, he would lock in to an additional five-year deal at the price that we had him. And, of course, we didn't from 2001, 2002. So 2003 comes along, and we had the Nosotros Creemos, Tony Pena, We Believe.
Yep.
And in that year, we played 500 baseball, and it locked in Sweeney into that contract. And then the next year, he starts this downward spiral of injuries.
Yeah.
That never allowed him to return to his form.
Not the same guy again.
So, unfortunately, we played 500 baseball, but we got locked into a player that never was himself again.
Yeah. Well, we'll get back to that subject matter in a minute, but before we do that, I want to take some time to explain to people who might be listening or watching with great interest in the subject matter what we're doing here, because it's important for people to understand. You and I had an inquiry not half an hour ago, where we both agreed we wanted to get to yes on this issue.
I want to put this to bed for all parties concerned, because everybody who has a stake in this, it's a serious matter, and everybody is going to benefit from us doing the right thing by compromising.
And when we last spoke, I speculated that there are a handful of the 32 senators currently in office in the chamber right now, suggesting that others are in other parts of the building. And if I had to guess, I suspect that we are not the only two people Senate in the building right now trying to decide how to approach this issue. But it's important for reasons that go on. Sometimes things need to stay on the floor. It's not the best course of action to lay something over and get back to it another day. That in the interest of putting pressure on all concerned parties in the chamber to come to an agreeable resolution, that you keep the ball in the air and you keep the bill on the floor. And I completely respect that. I think there's a time and place for that, and I think that's absolutely appropriate in this instance on this issue, because we do need to get this done. But when we have these tactics of, well, every hour we're going to ratchet it down, that's great, that's fine. Every hour we can continue to ratchet up the spuriousness of the debate if we need to. And so forgive me when somebody says, I'm going to start at 5 o'clock at X, and 6 o'clock I'm going to go to X minus 10, and 7 o'clock I'm going to go to X minus 20. That's fine. My debate's going to get further and further off topic the longer we go, because that's not productive to negotiations. It's not productive to debate. It's not helping the process. And forgive me, that's why I felt we needed to take a right angle turn when we came back to this.
It's actually the first time in two sessions that you and I have been here that we have ever talked off topic. And it's one of the privileges of being a senator is that you do not have to stay on topic. One of the frustrating things of being a House member is you get gaveled down when you start to tangent into other areas, even if you think that it's important.
Now, I will tell you, some would say that is a virtue of the House and a peril of the Senate.
Right.
But
you and I have never done it. In 2 years, that conversation about baseball was the first time in 2 years that you and I have ever spoke about something not pertinent to the issue at hand.
Yeah. Well, and the reality is it's important for this debate to continue because it is facilitating the process that will hopefully allow us to get to a resolution on this issue tonight. That is part of what goes on here. I it's not the first time I've gone off topic on this floor in this microphone. It is a relatively rare occurrence. I try to keep Frankly, I try to be surgical in my participation debate. The senator from Nottoway might, on account of the Tabor debate yesterday, have a different, might have a certain reaction to that statement. But, debate has purpose. And if we're not working through the process on the floor in an effort to get the bill where it needs to go, and I got to tell you, when we keep getting a worse and worse bill every hour, that's not adding to the process. It's important for people to be working on the amendments that might actually get on.
Right. No, I agree. And at least the senator from the 12th actually took it to the third degree this time. Or otherwise, we had an amendment ready to go for $1.1 million.
And that may very well have been tactical on his part. He's a very experienced senator. I understand what he's trying to do. And you know what? He's trying to increase the heat to get resolution because he wants to get this done, too. And I completely respect that. I just wish we weren't going about it in this manner, but that's fine. But I just felt that in that moment when, we...
Here's what I don't understand. Back to the topic.
Of sure.
So if he offered $500,000 with no COLA, our tradition has been to add a COLA to any type of reward that we do. Like, if you and I can come to agreement, last year it was $750,000, let's say we move towards them and say $650,000. I'm just speaking for me now, I'm not speaking for you. I don't know what your appetite or your tolerance is for this issue, but I can tell you that, $650,000 probably gets me comfortable with where we're at. $650,000 with a COLA. I would like to know, and maybe somebody can run these numbers, maybe some staff listening can run these numbers, how much difference in a premium for a doctor would there be between $500 and $650,000? Are we talking about, $100 a month difference? Is that what this debate's over? Are we talking about $1,000 a month difference? It would be interesting to know the difference between $500 and $650,000 in a practical sense of what the doctors are actually going to have to pay. Is that difference to them worth having no cap?
Well, and I suspect...
That's where we're at right now, is no cap.
I will tell you, I suspect that as we are out here advancing the debate, such as we are, that there are likely members of the body who are looking at that very question. And this debate is being played in all of their offices, and I know that many people are, many senators are working to try to come up with an amendment that whether it's on 1173 or this SJR, that may allow us to end this debate and maybe pass a good law. But I want to back up to the procedural status that we're in because it's important. You mentioned that the senator from Nottoway has now placed us within the third degree. Say we have the SJR, we have an amendment. What do we have a substitute amendment and an amendment to the substitute amendment?
No, we have an amendment to the substitute.
Right.
And an amendment to the underlying amendment, which, if you remember correctly, we had a ruling from the floor leader that if we tried to sub that out, that's out of order.
Well, except that I think he stated very clearly, because I remember very clearly it was my amendment that got bounced. I think at this point a substitute amendment is still possibly in order, and all I would say is that if that's where we get and this is going to be an SJR, maybe somebody is working on a substitute amendment right now. On the other hand, if we're going to go the statutory approach, maybe it'll be... maybe it'll be another floor substitute to 1173, and you never know, that thing could hit the floor and get perfected in 30 seconds. It's happened.
Right.
So who knows? Who knows? But as we are out here, trying to continue the debate on terms that are getting worse by the hour, as the Senator from Ottawa has promised, efforts are being made by other senators to try to come up with amendments that might be capable of garnering the support of the body. And that's important. That's how the process needs to work.
And this is the Senate, and this is the way it works. And I think that there's some charm to the fact that we have people who are working on solving the problem while you and I are engaged in this sort of divergent effort. But I kind of feel bad for the staff that has to listen to us, that has to sit
there. It's not the least of what they have to put up with.
For the hours, knowing that you and I are not accomplishing the solution right now.
Well, we are participating and contributing to the process. But yes,
it is the process.
I don't see your drafting hand going, and neither is mine. No,
it is the process. Although I think that if we did do it, we'd have to have another point of order, which may necessarily be taken under advisement.
Well, I was going to say the last The last point of order resulted in the bill getting laid over. I don't know that that would happen on this SJR at the moment, but I would hate to game the process and try to achieve that result. I mean, I suppose somebody could, but that's not what we want to do here. So, right. Well, I just, you know, and maybe you and I will be talking for quite a while here, and maybe
my
we'll
staff is listening. I have a fantastic book that is pertaining to what we've been talking about. That's on my desk, behind my desk, and if they're listening, it's called The Intellectual Devotional of American History, and it's a fantastic read. I'd be interested if they would bring that out to me. I'd appreciate it.
Well, I don't want to put you through that, and I'm not sure I want to put anybody else through that. I don't know that we're quite there yet, but if we get amendments all the way down to 350 or zero or what have you, maybe so. I would hope that's not what we're going to find ourselves confronted with. I would hope that everybody walks out of this building either this afternoon or this evening or tonight or heaven help us early tomorrow morning with a resolution to this issue.
You know what I want to do?
But you and I are here standing trying to help facilitate.
You know what I want to do? I want to vote yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I do too.
Yes, and solve this issue for all parties involved. That's what I want to do.
I do too.
And I think that we've solved pretty complicated problems in the past. The 34 of us, you know, we're the ones who ultimately have to be responsible for decisions that we make. I understand that folks in the halls are participating in this, as has always been. It's always been that way. But I got to believe that at some point in time, the 34 of us can come to some sort of agreement. Because I know the senator from Phelps, he probably doesn't want to be here any more than we do.
Well, we all want to be here. It's just
I'm talking through
the exercise of this debate.
The process by which we are not on topic is sure. Not something that we want to necessarily be engaged in.
You know, and I, as you and I are talking longer, I want to try to stay closer to home on the topic. I just felt in that moment when we're going through the silly exercise of ratcheting down with increasingly unacceptable amendments that the offeror knows are increasingly unacceptable, I just felt in that moment it was time to take a right angle turn and be deliberately off point to make the point that you can play it.
It's funny because that amendment reminded me of what the minority in the House used to do. We used to come up with amendments that would be kind of gotcha amendments and try to offer those on the bills. And, you know, because we knew that there was no way it was palatable to the majority.
Yeah.
And we, you know, would send five members up on the signature on a roll call. And then, you know, that was the House.
You know what I called those? I called those meal plan amendments. And I think that's just silly. That's not what the process should be for, either on this side or on that side. And I'll say this. I think that the Senate does a much better job of avoiding that sort of thing. We avoid taking unnecessary votes for gotcha reasons. We really try to focus where our constituents have to weigh in through their elected senator. We try to focus those votes on substantive.
We do standing divisions to keep the politics from entering into this chamber.
And unfortunately, it's not the same in the House. I will say they made a rule change that. Resulted in some derision from members of the minority by beyond requiring that amendments be pre-filed, but that amendments to amendments and substitute amendments be pre-filed over in the House, which is to say you cannot do anything to surprise the majority ever over there now. And the minority understandably had some qualms about that because it allows the majority to decide who they recognize on the floor, and if they just don't, they just won't recognize somebody if they don't want to script
debate when that should be an organic process.
They can steer around certain amendments if they don't want to have to vote on them. They can steer around amendments to amendments by simply not recognizing the offers. Here in the Senate, we all have the ability to get recognized on the floor, and debate doesn't terminate when people are still standing, unless the sponsor decides to lay over the bill. And for that reason, we're able. For that lone reason, I think we are able to get away from the kind of gotcha politics that I'm afraid sometimes happens on the other side of the building. And
this chamber is built on mutual respect. It's built on admiration that we have as professionals. And it's not about the next election. It's about the current legislation.
That's right.
And I think that that is a, you know, that makes us different from Washington, D.C., quite frankly. The fact that the 34 of us take each vision, I've never in my House days ever saw somebody's mind changed through the course of debate on the
happened
floor
to me.
Of the House. But
it happened to me in this room.
It happens in this room.
It happened to me in this room on the Lieutenant Governor succession bill that I think at the time was sponsored by the senator from, it might not have been sponsored by the senator from Boone, but I'll tell you, he said something that changed my mind on an issue. And that's as it should be. And we're fond of pointing out that out of all of the legislative bodies in the United States, this is the one that does not have partisan seating. We are interspersed amongst each other. We serve as senators, not as Republicans and Democrats, and I think that's important. You know, you mentioned the 34, and I mentioned the 32. Of course, right now we have two vacancies in the Senate.
True.
One of the sort of fun facts about the numbers 34 and 163 is that a constitutional majority on the House side is 82, a constitutional majority on the Senate side is 18. You add them together, it takes 100, and then the governor's signature takes 101 Missourians to change the law. I can't think of any other reason why the numbers would have been 163 and 34 other than that. I know there have been a lot of talks in years about trying to, you know, possibly narrow and gradually contract the ranks of the House. None of that's ever really gotten very far, but it would save taxpayers some money, and you could still leave the districts at a size where one person could walk through it twice in one summer if they really worked hard, which I think is important. But in any event, it looks like you've received a delivery. I am not.
No, I think I don't think we go to this yet.
Yeah,
The senator from the 12th decides that he's going to pull this amendment and offer another one to drop us further. Then we go to the book.
Well,
and start
you know what? That is an interesting idea, and I will tell you, I have noticed
because
that
Professor Holzman is ready.
Oh.
To start lecturing.
No, we're not going to go there.
The fundamental principles of our great country, you know, the past. That is so rich with business and politics and leadership and war and all of the things that make us who we are as a people and as a culture. I believe
I don't know
ready
that we're
yet.
There yet. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm
we're
not
there
ready
yet.
Yet.
I would
I'm
like to see
yet.
Us let's, not get there. And I say that if no other reason.
Let's see if we can't vote yes on something first.
I've been in your office. I've seen your bookshelf. That's not the only book on your bookshelf. You got a whole shelf full of books. And you know what I have? You've been in my office, maybe not as frequently because I'm on the fourth floor, but I am lucky enough to have inherited a very substantial collection of state manuals from a legislator who termed out of the House last year. They go back. There's a lot of gaps
talking
in the 50s
the blue
and 60s.
Book?
Yeah, the blue books. There's
so
some
the
gaps.
Blue book would probably be more exciting than what I would do.
Well, I don't know. But, well, exciting is all in the eye of the beholder. But it goes back. My collection goes back. I think the earliest one that I have is maybe either the first 2 years of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration or the last 2 years of the Herbert Hoover administration. I'm not sure about that. I do have some gaps, particularly in the 50s, 60s, and maybe 70s, but it's a great collection, and I'm very grateful to the representative who allowed me to have it. I think that there's a lot of history in those books, and I certainly hope that however long I serve in this body that I never have to crack one of them in this room. I have no intention of being that guy or doing that.
I think it's one of the last options reserved.
Yeah.
This book is interesting. I first came across this book when the former senator from the 22nd, who you and I share as a roommate, he had this on audio CD, and he loaned me the audio CD, and I used to listen to it on the way back and forth from Kansas City to Jeff City.
Like the tape so much you had
to
go and
see
the book?
I liked the tape so much I had to go buy the book, and I think it's very well done because each subject is in very short prose, and then at the end of each subject has three additional facts about that subject, and it's broken down into categories. So the categories are politics and leadership, war and peace, rights and reform, business, building America, literature, and arts. That's the categories that it's broken down in.
It sounds like a Jeopardy round.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. Maybe I'm sure this is required reading before you go on Jeopardy, but the first subject is John Smith.
And, now.
Yeah, so we started at 1607. I mean that's a a fairly decent place because Jamestown. Have you been to Jamestown?
I have not. My father lives in Roanoke.
And you haven't been to Jamestown.
I've not been to Jamestown.
It's a really
never
neat.
I can say that I've been to Spain and Oklahoma.
But it's really a neat place. It you know, it's one of those period places where you walk into it, and they do the best they can at replica, at trying to recreate and reconstitute what it must have looked like or felt like to be a settler at that time. And so I'd encourage you to go there. You know, that whole Virginia is just rich with history. Monticello, have you had a chance to visit Monticello?
I'm not sure that I have. I've been to the campus at UVA. I don't believe I've been to Monticello.
How about Mount Vernon?
I've been to Mount Vernon. It's been 16 years since I've been to Mount Vernon, but I lived in Washington, D.C. for a semester in the spring of 1998, which, by the way, was a very interesting time to be living in Washington, D.C. I was on a bus on a Sunday morning, and I went by a hotel in town that it was sort of known that at about that time that there was a deposition taking place in that hotel, and I remember looking out the window of the bus at the hotel and thinking, gosh, I wonder if anything will ever come out of that deposition. And about a week or two later, a whole lot came out of that deposition. So I
lived in D.C. in the fall of 99, or the fall of 2000, maybe.
Yeah.
I worked in the U.S. Senate for a little bit of time. And
I heard about that.
Yeah. That was a big subject of discussion in my first primary.
I'm sure it was.
But I lived in Bethesda, Maryland. Now, just outside of Bethesda, Maryland, on the red line, no, maybe it was the white line. I think this is red line. It was at White Flint Stop, and I just remember the rent being so expensive to be there on what I was getting paid, and taking the metro into Union Station and walking. I think we were in the what are the buildings there? The Hart Building, one of them.
That's certain. I will take a moment to note that I greatly appreciate your disinclination to pass along Washington D.C. rent to your Jefferson City. I appreciate that greatly. I lived in Mount Pleasant.
You're stealing your your room right now. I'm telling you that I think when I was there.
I'm current.
Not
that much going for me.
Think about this. When I was there, this was in 99-2000. My friend who worked for Senator Bond at the time, and I worked for, of course, Senator Ashcroft, we split a room, and it was $1,600 a month to be in this place. And I don't think I've ever paid as much since, but I remember that being very cost prohibitive for the rest of the things going on in the world that I cared to be interested in. But still, I was 23 years old, and you know those times are the times that kind of shape and form who you become, and I appreciated it. And as much as, you know, Senator Ashcroft and I didn't see eye to eye, or actually I was still forming my opinions at the time, and he helped shape some of them, maybe not in the way or the direction that he had necessarily intended to, I still appreciated the opportunity to work in the U.S.
Absolutely.
Senate. And I still, to this day, and have a bit of respect and appreciation for that opportunity, though it didn't turn out the way that maybe it could have had I not gelled ideologically with the direction of the office. You know, I was still fond. I still had a good time. It was enjoyable to be there during those years.
No, it's funny. I had a good friend in law school who had a legislative internship while in law school, spent a semester in D.C. with a legislator of one party, and then after law school graduated and was a clerk for a judge whose last name is synonymous with another political philosophy. And I just remember there are probably not too many people with those particular two names right next to each other on their resume. But I won't name the office holders. I have immense respect for both of them. Even though they come from different places and have
a chance when you were in D.C. to spend time in the mall, to walk the monuments, to really enjoy it as a tourist, so to speak.
You know, I still vividly remember. It seems like everything in my life happened in 1983, but I think just as I look back in time, it's like I remember every major vacation or trip that I took as a kid being 83. But in 1983, we visited Washington, D.C., and I remember it vividly. It was wintertime, and we walked everywhere, and we did a couple of Smithsonians. We did the Capitol. We did a number of other landmarks at different spots on the mall. All on the first day that we got into town, and I remember with my brother and my parents, and we walked all over D.C. And I, to this day, still remember how sore my feet were by the time we got to the Capitol, which was mid-afternoon, and we had been at it since the start of the, early in the morning at that point. I mean, I still remember actually sitting down on the floor in one of the rooms that we were touring in the United States Capitol because I was so sore and tired of walking. And then we walked back to our hotel, and I don't think I got off the couch the rest of the night. But
back since you've been elected?
I'm trying to think. Gosh, I'm not sure. It seems like I was through there. I think I flew in and out of Reagan National when I went to UVA, but that would have been before I was elected. I have been back since I've been elected. I've been back actually a couple of times. In connection with my law practice. In fact, I actually had a case pending in court in Washington, D.C., until maybe a little bit more than 2 years ago, but it was actually a copyright claim arising out of a purported tell-all tabloid book about our current president. And there were a couple of different people. I guess the author had said something about somebody, not the president, but there was another figure in the book who felt as though he had been defamed by the book. And then sued for defamation, and not only sued the author, who we weren't really concerned with, but sued the world's largest online retailer, who kind of got into the business by selling books online. They sued maybe the world's largest retail book chain, and another one that has since got out of business that was maybe the largest or second largest book chain in the country, at least at the time. And we represented, if I remember right, we represented maybe the third largest book chain in the nation, one that's actually based primarily in the South. I don't know that they have any Missouri presence, but our client was a bookseller like some of the household name ones, just from a different part of the country. But they sued all the booksellers, and so we had to get the claim dismissed. Which we did, and we prevailed. And as far as I know, that litigation finally ended. But we were not. We checked out of the case early. We got our dismissal and got on with our lives. But I'm actually not sure that I had to appear in court in D.C. on that. But it's been a couple of years ago. But it's.
I've been fairly frequently, in CSL and in CEL, different organizations that have meetings in D.C. I'm going back relatively soon for the Truman National Security Project, an organization I belong to. So I do have opportunities. I've actually been invited to the White House a couple times to meet the president. And while I was there, I took the kids, the wife and the kids. My wife and two kids had never been there before. So they did a lot of the tourist stuff while I was meeting with YEO and that. But we went back, my wife and I, this CSL conference that we were a part of, and she came with me, and Congressman Cleaver was kind enough to set up a tour of the Capitol. Now, when I worked in the U.S. Senate in 2000, I guess 99, one of my jobs was to give the tour, and I had a 15-page script on what everything meant, and, I did my best to try to memorize most of it, and, we had a young staffer give myself and my wife a tour. And it hadn't changed much, a little bit. There's been some renovations. But it was neat to go through recently and things that I had given the tour for previously, 14 years ago.
Sure.
And it was the first time my wife had ever gone through the Capitol. And they allowed us, because, I serve in this body, they allowed us to go down on the floor of the House. And that's the first time I'd ever been on the floor of the House. They were out of session, so there wasn't any business going on Saturday. And it was just all the history. We talked about history before. When you're in the Senate chamber and they're like, this was his seat, and to find your own senator seat, to say, hey, where Senator Blunt sit, where Senator McCaskill sit. Even though we are elected officials, when you get there, especially since I enjoy history so much, kind of turn back into, the kid, the tourist, the, tell me more, and I just, if you haven't, I encourage you and all of our colleagues to take a trip to D.C., go to the nation's capital, ignore the dysfunction of the members, and just enjoy the building itself and the grandeur of the United States as it has been represented over the last 200 years, and so I would encourage you to do that, and of course, try to set up a visit to the White House and all of those things. It's a neat experience.
Well, one of my favorite features of the Capitol in Washington, and it's something that was shown to me on a tour by a college classmate who actually is well known to both myself and the senator from the 15th, is that in the United States Capitol, and the same may be true for Missouri State Capitol, I'm not sure, I've never found out, but in the United States Capitol, if you open the outer doors to the House and you open the outer doors to the Senate, the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House are facing each other and can make eye contact over the expanse of the building. I mean, it's a long distance, obviously, but they are literally right at eye to eye with each other just across the entire span of the building. I don't know. I suspect the same may be true of the Missouri Capitol as well. But
you know, some, it's we should try at some point in time when we're not engaged in this great and arduous struggle. we should throw open all the doors and literally go to the two dioceses and see if it matches up.